Hello everybody, it's Peter Smith again with the Aged Awareness Show. It's Saturday, 11th of January 2020. The following is a short extract from Dwayne Hepman's book, A Journey to Real Freedom, Book 2, Scene 10 of his amazing romantic adventures series. The real universal guide, Rebazar Tars, is speaking to Dwayne. The is already perfect, so nothing has to be created with your real awareness. You'll meet the powerful space gods someday and have the experience for yourself as you did in your past life with me. You have met them many times, and so you will soon be brought up to date this lifetime on what they are doing now. The god of the second level lives on a mountain of light in the upper astral region and has many names according to the belief system a person belongs to. Many people feel just because they have become familiar with the label of their god, who they have come to know, they are on the right course to the ultimate. Not so, because life is so much bigger than humans have already decided. The governing lords of these two lesser heavens are not interested in anyone finding out about the real guides and the is. They are under the dualistic nature in the psychic realms, and their urge is to keep each soul in the lower levels of illusion and maya in unconsciousness. Because they have convinced so many for so long, the vast majority have stuck with the ideas that have been invented down through the ages they have promoted, which are all manufactured fronts and mainly deception. The saviors and saints of the past were the students of life, who tried to point the way to the upper levels, the many mansions, but who really listened? They only knew of the two heavens of man and not the is. Today they are looked to and worshipped as the intermediate between heaven and earth, just like television preachers that have become so popular. Most of them have gone on their way, but some do still assist mankind, but from a lesser sense than the real guides. In the earth world, there are volumes of documentation that describe fragments of the second and third levels that really do not relate to the great reality. There are only bits and pieces about the unseen worlds. There are many teachings with a lot of pretty words and stories available that may make a person feel emotionally happy, but when their time is up on Earth, they are still wondering where they will be going when they leave this planet. The fear that has been installed in them comes to the surface at death and displays itself in the individual awareness as the time of passing takes place. Not everyone is subject to this, but many are. Mankind has been sold a bill of goods that he cannot collect on, even though he is constantly marketed with the idea that he can. Instead of taking up the study of someone else's rewritten works, he should take up the study of his own real being. Each person is their own answer. Once the individual decides a real position for themselves, the real guides will appear to assist. The unseen worlds are the first step to the reality that is. From there comes the real guidance, freedom, and real love that all are looking for. The outer life is the fabricated world of the ego and what it determines to be real. The physical life has its place as a starting point, but if you do not risk giving up the containment that you have agreed to, then you risk not knowing what is so much more wonderful beyond what the senses will ever know. According to the limited view of the human mind, you only live once. This idea is very real in each lifetime because you always get a new body and mind to work with. So it would seem this life is all there is, and has ever been. Lifetimes are like puffs of smoke. One moment you are here, and the next moment you are gone. The real guides only promote real freedom, not worshipping or praying to any self-absorbed authority figure on the earth or in the clouds, or even a personality from the past. The existing systems have marketed a false security to the masses to believe in. Let me explain how things basically stack up when it comes to any form of guidance. First off, you are born onto the earth and you have parents who raise you, who become your initial influence and guidance. Then, as you go along with your life, you have friends and eventually a mate that may assist you. Then there comes a time when you will probably become involved in something religious. From there you may come to realize there are spiritual paths that actually know more than the standard religions. And so you switch over to something more interesting. It has now come to the point where what once is actually no more. The masters and gurus of the past and present are all outdated and have become like the babysitter you had when you were young. The process I have just explained first off deals with what is taking place on the earth, which includes politics and religion. From the unseen side of life, there are also guides on the various levels that will be assisting the humans who are far down the evolutionary scale. From the three lower levels, we have assistance from fairies, angels, and some of the saviors and saints. All of those mentioned here deal with reincarnation and karma from the earth to the two known heavens of man. It is an endless cycle until one comes to recognize the real guides of the all is. End of quotation. In deciding which quotation to use this time, being the fourth such essay, I used the same technique as I did for number three in the series. Namely, I pulled one of Duane's books out at random, opened it while looking away and plonked my finger down before looking to see what I had hit. In essay three, having used then book three as it happens, I found myself passing over reincarnation and the interlife state, saying these were outside the scope of that work. Now it seems is the time to at least revisit those topics, as I appear to have been directed to them by the real guides. As the main purpose of these talks is sharing with anybody who is interested enough to listen, then it seems to me the logical thing is to a certain extent discuss my own experiences, if only in broad terms. I could fill a book with it all, and indeed the book is written, but unlikely to be read, certainly while I am still in this present physical body. As indicated by Duane in the quotation above, those who come to the new you invariably do so by a long, arduous route, spanning, if we only knew it, very many lifetimes. In my own case, it took, in this present lifetime, some 70 years, and who knows what before. From an early age, I had very many strange experiences, inexplicable by so-called normal standards, though it was not until my early teens that I really came across the idea of reincarnation, the result being that all these things started to make sense, and in the fullness of time, started to form an enormous jigsaw puzzle with truly horrific results. I said I would discuss my experiences in only broad terms, but one or two random examples seem to be urging me to relate them. I will follow my intuition on this, although I know I am walking a tightrope here. As always, I will put my trust in the real guides. When I was a small boy in the 1950s, like all boys my age, I often played in the street with my friends, and inevitably these often included cowboys and Indians, soldiers and so on. The six guns we used were usually fairly primitive and derived from Christmas present cowboy outfits, plastic water pistols and even sticks of wood if none of the above were available. One birthday or Christmas, I cannot recall which, an aunt of mine who lived a few doors away with my paternal grandparents, and being single was always good for presents, gave me a magnificent cap gun. It was to me as a small boy heavy and realistic, a far cry from the things we were used to, mentioned above. One day in the street, in some battle or other, I hid behind a brick wall, and leaning out, pointed the brute at an enemy. Suddenly the strangest feeling came over me. A strong feeling of having done this before, for real. The gun felt so right in my hand. But how could that be? Saturday evenings on BBC TV in the 1950s inevitably meant a mystery or similar serial at 8 p.m, usually spread over 6 weeks. Until 1955 we only had the one black and white channel, in the UK, so we saw a lot of these serials. One such was a quite sinister story concerning an insidious alien invasion. It was a second such serial in which the main character was a space scientist called Bernard Quatermass, and this one was simply called Quatermass 2 and was transmitted in 1955. The earlier, the Quatermass experiment, had been transmitted in 1953 and was the first such what we would call sci-fi serial to appear on UK TV. In Quatermass 2, small jelly-like creatures were surreptitiously arriving on the Earth, and by a process of possession and mind control that would have made the CIA proud, were getting the locals to build factory plants around the world, including large domes in which they could survive, as they could not live for more than a few minutes in our atmosphere. In the episode in question, Quatermass and a small group had been allowed a visit to the planet, but only to be shown what the zombie-like humans wanted them to see, it ostensibly being a synthetic food factory. They were not allowed to see inside the domes. We were to find out soon enough why. The small creatures were being taken by the zombies to the domes, and inside they morphed into huge shapeless monsters in a vast sea of deadly, poisonous to us, slime. Unnoticed by the others, one man slipped away and was only missed when the group were exiting the plant. A man accompanying Quatermass suddenly drew his attention to the top of one of the domes, and we then saw the ghastly spectacle of the missing man, covered from head to foot in slime, slowly working his way down a winding steel staircase, choking and gasping for air, finally to fall the last few feet. For that few seconds I had the most ghastly feeling it was I who was gasping for air and struggling to breathe, to live indeed. It really is impossible to put it into words, but I shall never forget that experience, although I was only 9 years old at the time. In recent years, the three Quatermass BBC serials from the 50s have been found. Unfortunately, only the first two episodes of the first one still exist, and issued in a DVD set, which I quickly obtained and studied with fascination. I've watched that particular episode very carefully many times, and though it will never again have the same physical effect on me, I still find it compulsive to watch. It was also interesting to see how accurate my memory was of the programme. Quatermass and the Pit went out in 1958, after all those years. All three stories were later made into films for the cinema, but inevitably much shorter than the three-hour TV epics and generally less well acted. Certainly the relevant scene was nothing like the original, either in appearance or effect. The author of the original stories, Nigel Neal, was truly well ahead of his time and seemingly aware of things which are only now coming into the public domain. Quatermass 2 certainly has uncomfortable echoes of the dark forces taking over the planet and fooling everybody until it is too late. Quatermass and the Pit dealt with the idea that the human race was effectively manufactured 5 million years ago by invaders from Mars, an idea only now receiving serious attention by some more open-minded scientists. These two examples are, as intimated above, just a tiny fraction of the jigsaw puzzle I spoke of, but perhaps will serve for now as an indication why I soon came to realise I had to have lived before. I had come to the conclusion well before I rediscovered Wagner, a topic I have already covered in the first of these essays. I had also realised that my last life was logically only one of numerous such visits to this plane of existence, and was one of my less pleasant such excursions. In fact, it was a pretty disastrous one, as I would soon establish. If nothing else, it would show me that the idea of reincarnation was most certainly not wishful thinking, as is sometimes said by narrow-minded critics. Far from it. As I started the task of putting together for the jigsaw puzzle, I began reading extensively about reincarnation and the survival of death generally, and soon realised how it all made sense, both theoretically and more specifically, of my own life and experiences. I began seeking out, indeed I believe being directed to, various groups and learned and experienced all sorts of so-called New Age things, including Reiki, reflexology, meditation, yoga, and perhaps most usefully, positive affirmations. The latter particularly helped me health-wise, and I had until very recently forgotten how to be ill, and I believe my recent breathing problems, which I've now conquered, were part of a concerted psychic attack I've been through this year, something I was warned to expect by the New You people. Basically, by even discussing these matters, we are rubbing up the dark powers that be the wrong way, but we can count on the real guides to protect us from anything really serious and or life-threatening. During the course of all this, I had various past life sessions, varying from the sublime to the core blimey. One man, however, stands out and rightly came highly recommended. He normally lived in Australia, apparently, but occasionally came back to his native UK to host workshops and also do one-to-one past life sessions. I would eventually have two of these, separated by about 6 months. His technique was refreshingly different to the by now familiar one of so-called hypnotism. Basically laying there and saying what first came into your mind or what you see after crossing a bridge or going down a tunnel into a supposed past life and all the rest of it. In fact, he did all the work. I just had to lay there with eyes closed and he somehow read my third body, as he termed it, through meditation. I am sure it was totally genuine. He didn't know me from Adam, let alone anything about me. He asked me no questions about why I was there or anything else for that matter. He told me before we started not to be surprised at what came up, and it was sometimes the case that more than one past life came up, sometimes nothing at all did. In the event, it was five lives that surfaced. I do not wish to go into any great details at this point, save to say for my money he got it in one. The first life that came up was clearly my last one, and confirmed pretty well exactly what I had already suspected, to put it mildly. Certain minor details proved to me he was not getting it from me telepathically or any other way, and one of the other lives, though 2,000 to 3,000 years earlier, seemed very much to cross-reference with my last one. Indeed, he told me a scene from my last life cut into this one at one point, indicating to him there was a definite connection. After the session finished, he agreed with me that the recent life was almost an action replay of the earlier one, and ended much the same painful way. I said I felt all five lives were rather exotic, to which he responded not really, just being perhaps some of the ones having more valuable things to teach me. I had to remember we all had hundreds if not thousands of lifetimes, the vast majority of which were boring, mundane and repetitive and of little experiential value whatsoever. Inevitably only the more interesting and dynamic ones were going to come up in the hope of teaching us something. He also advised me that he saw one of my spirit guides who said I was in a mega rut and had many lifetimes where I was like an automaton, a mechanical man, was always had a kind of father figure or leader I followed almost blindly and greatly admired or even loved, and that I needed to be more creative. Perhaps that is why I feel the great urge to put together these essays. I told him I always thought my last life was the big one, to which he wholeheartedly agreed, and added, "You usually find when you are in a rut and making little or no progress that you will get a life that is a kick in the pants to wake you up and get you moving." In more recent years, the sessions and workshops have pretty well given way to more intensive reading. The numerous books I read came to me in what I can now see was a very logical order, and were to some extent supported by the odd good TV documentary. Near-death experience items were supplanted by excellent authors on real death and reincarnation works. In this last category, one noteworthy author was Michael Newton. I picked up a copy of his Journey of Souls on holiday one year and found it tremendously interesting as were the further three of his books I acquired subsequently. In a nutshell, Newton describes how he came to hypnotise various people down to the theta level, which seems to be the collective unconscious or superconscious described by Carl Jung and others. Edgar Cayce, the great American clairvoyant, said that anything that comes up from that level is always true. The less deep subconscious level is personal to us only, and basically can get it wrong or tell downright lies as much as the conscious level. From his sessions, Newton was surprised to find remarkably similar reports coming up over and over again by all types of people of their previous death experiences following from previous lives and what happened to them next. Boiling it down, the usual scenario had the deceased separating from their body and finding themselves in another place, being greeted by previously deceased loved ones. Often, though not always, after a journey through a long tunnel. After a certain amount of time, being with a soul group, a spirit guide would take them eventually to a tribunal-like experience, where they would basically get a dressing down about the things they got wrong by a number of elders behind a long table, albeit in a fairly friendly and non-confrontational way. Subsequently, they would be taken to a place where screens showed them snippets of two or three possible future lives from which they made a choice, and ultimately they were sent back to Earth to go through the whole dreary business again. Subsequent to Newton's books, I discovered Dolores Cannon and read a lot of her books, including the very revealing four-part work, The Convoluted Universe. Her fascinating books took things further and, being written over a period of years, trace her own development and growth as a deep trance hypnotist. As she said herself in the later volumes, it was as if the powers that be were gradually educating her and trusting her with more and more formerly jealously guarded knowledge. Hence she graduated from the cases of the more mundane earthly lives to cases of reincarnated aliens from other worlds, more completely spirit beings, and much else besides. While I had been doing all this reading and other things, Gwen and Kevin had been doing their own similar things, and it was perhaps inevitable that our paths should eventually converge. I started hearing them talking about somebody called Dwayne, and one day curiosity took over and I asked who this Dwayne was. Kevin very quickly put me in the picture, and I soon found myself reading book one of Dwayne's amazing romantic adventures series, to be followed avidly by books 2 to 8. At the time of writing, I'm awaiting Kevin finishing book 9, but then he is a very busy man, now virtually devoting all his time to New You matters. Once I got into the New You, I realised that the aforementioned books by Michael Newton and Dolores Cannon, though wonderfully interesting and useful, inevitably fell short of the full picture. Inevitably, because the subjects hypnotised by definition were now back here on Earth, and therefore not got any further than the experiences I outlined a moment ago in connection with Newton's books. From what I have learned from Dwayne's books, and regular contact with him via Kevin's Skypes, I realise there is so much more to it all, a universe full in fact. Thus, I'm becoming aware of the real universal guides, those beings of light and emissaries of the All-Ears who have taken it upon themselves to assist the upward advancement of those of us who demonstrate genuine intent to have such advancement, and we regularly saying or singing mentally or audibly the New You. They will take us past the obstacles of the so-called elders and other contricts designed only to keep the earth populated by slaves for the benefit of the favoured few and their forthcoming new world order. Obviously, it is not just that simple. We have to work our way up through the next four levels of creation. We will then be confronted by the deep dark border, or level 6, where we will need more help from the real guides to get through this level, lit only by our own illumination and that of the guides, until we finally break through to level 7, the first of the real universes. When we get there, we have really made it, but there is always scope for going on further to unimaginably beautiful levels. by this time we are really back home again and at one with it all is. I hope that's a bit of interest to anybody who's listening, and hope to do some more of these essays in the near future. Thanks for listening, and it just remains for me to sing New You. New You.